Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the AB Science web conference. I would like now to hand over to Alain Moussy and Jean-Pierre Kinet. Gentlemen, please go ahead.
Good evening and good afternoon for the ones in the United States. Thank you to join us for our web conference, where we're going to discuss this new clinical study evaluating mesothelin combination with isocapsetin in COVID-19. The presentation is going to be structured in three parts. With me, Jean-Pierre Kinet, who is the co-president of the scientific committee of AB Science, will describe the scientific rationale behind this trial and the combination of masitinib and isocapsetin in COVID-19. Then I will describe the two remaining parts of the presentation, the differentiating positioning of masitinib and the design of the study. After this presentation, that should be less than 30 minutes, we'll open it for your questions as usual. So the call should be less than 1 hour. So quick introduction of each of us. I forgot to give my name. So my name is Alain Moussy. I'm the CEO and co-founder of AB Science. And Jean-Pierre, would you like to briefly introduce yourself?
You just did. Well, I am an MD. I am an immunologist. I have been at Harvard for 30 years. I am a researcher, but I am also a clinician. I have founded two biotech companies, and I'm happy to be here to hopefully explain the rationale of associating masitinib with isocapsetin in the treatment of COVID-19, and particularly in those patients that are really sick.
Thank you, Jean-Pierre. So we'll start with this this section on the scientific rationale, and we can move directly to slide 6, which is on the screen of the attendees.
Okay. So in this slide, I just want to summarize the COVID disease. Not written here, but COVID starts usually with fever in most of the patients and cough and very often headache, and then so this is what we would call the viral phase. But the virus then managed to activate the immune system, and this is the provoke what we call a cytokine storm. So what is a cytokine storm? It is an activation of a number of cells in the immune system that release cytokines, and these cytokines themselves call for other cells to come, and there is an inflammatory cascade that really provoke a tremendous respiratory distress. So it's particularly severe in the lungs, and that's provoking what's called ARDS and very often death. And so we will now review of what is really causing this cytokine storm. What can we do to inhibit or to treat these patients? So next slide. Can I get the next slide? Yes. So as I said, the cytokine storm is driven by a number of cells, and one of the major cells is the mast cells. And mast cells has been known for a long time to be orchestrating inflammatory responses. And the mast cells themselves release a number of cytokines, many of them, but in particular, IL-6 and IL-1, that have been shown by the Chinese and now by the Italian and other, and the French and the U.S., they have been shown these two cytokines particular to be present in the ARDS that we see with COVID-19. So the idea that we had is if we could find an inhibitor of mast cell, so upstream of the cytokine storm, that may be very beneficial to the patients. And as you know, AB Science has generated masitinib, that is an inhibitor of mast cell. It is a tyrosine kinase inhibitor that inhibits c-KIT, but it also inhibits Lin and Fin, two tyrosine kinases that are involved in the activation and the degranulation of mast cell. So we hope that the masitinib would be able to inhibit mast cell and therefore preventing the cytokine storm and ARDS and potentially reversing it. Next slide. Another cell that is involved in the cytokine storm is the macrophages, and it just you know that the masitinib also inhibits macrophages because it inhibits another tyrosine kinase, which is the receptor macrophage colony stimulating factor 1, and that inhibition of that receptor inhibits differentiation and activation of the macrophages. And in fact, in an asthma model, we have shown that masitinib was able to inhibit the infiltration of macrophages. Next slide. So masitinib has been also shown to be particularly effective in the lung. And in a preclinical model of lung injury with sickle cell disease, we have shown that masitinib was able to prevent death. And you see the curve on the right where the mice survive. So this is actually a very severe lung disease. And so this is a remarkable result. And as you know, AB Science also finished a phase 3 clinical study with 355 patients to show improvement of the severe asthma in the treated patients. So next slide. Then a third cell that is also involved is our neutrophils, and this is a cell that is inhibited by isokercetin. So isokercetin has been shown to inhibit neutrophil degranulation, infiltration of neutrophils within an inflammatory cascade. So next slide. So this is a slide I want to spend a bit of time on. When we started to see the patients with the ARDS, remember there was this note in the press that there were not enough respirators, that we were lacking respirators, so the patients were dying in the hospitals, and in fact it took a while, but we discovered that many of the patients were not improved by respirator, and in fact in Bergamo in Italy, they did an autopsy on 50 patients that died, and the 50 patients, when you look at their lungs, all of them had microthrombus in the lung. And so these microthrombi prevent the flow of blood in the alveola. So there is no way that the oxygen can interact with the red cells, and that these microthrombi also explain why the respirator were not necessarily effective in treating the patients. So it's very important to understand that the deaths in COVID mostly come from microthrombi. And these microthrombi are generated secondary to the cytokine storm and also by the direct interaction of the virus with the endothelium and the release of an enzyme called protein disulfide isomerase. Now, you can read in the literature in China that all of the severe patients, most of them, 98% of them, have an elevation of D-dimer. D-dimer is a biomarker of the thrombotic events, of your increased capacity to coagulate. All of the patients that are severe have an increase of D-dimer. And that's why we thought about isocercetin, because isocercetin has successfully treated cancer patients, in fact, in my hospital, that Israel Hospital in Boston. There was a study with late-stage pancreatic cancers. These pancreatic cancer people don't necessarily know that, but they die not from their cancer. 30% of them die from thrombosis. So this is a third of the patient, I'm saying. Late-stage pancreatic cancer die from thrombosis. And isocercetin has been shown in the phase 2 to prevent that thrombosis almost in all patients. So we thought that the association of masitinib with isocercetin might be very beneficial for the severe patients, because we already have shown that isocercetin can decrease D-dimer and prevent thrombosis. So next slide. Now, we already have thought about the association of masitinib and isocercetin in another context, and that's the context of ALS, so amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, that you know that AB Science has done studies in these patients and show clinical efficacy in some of these patients. But this is actually the first time we show this data. We found in a preclinical model that the masitinib and isocercetin had a synergy in killing senescent cells. Senescent cells are very important, important culprit in driving ALS disease. And so killing them could be very beneficial. So we think that masitinib and isocercetin have that synergy. But the same senescent cells are also deleterious in COVID, and that's known. So we think that by combining masitinib and isocercetin, we have a good association that could benefit the patient. So masitinib will work on being upstream of the cytokine storm, on mast cells, macrophages. Isocercetin will work on neutrophils, on the thrombosis, and together masitinib and isocercetin will combine to kill the senescent cells. So next slide. Now, masitinib has also been shown to have neurological tropism and to improve neurological symptoms, in particular in ALS, but also in progressive multiple sclerosis. And that's probably because it inhibits another type of macrophages, which are the microglia that is present in the brain, by virtue of the fact that it inhibits another tyrosine kinase receptor, which is the CSF1 receptor that is expressed by the microglia. So why is that important? Because a third of the patients with COVID present neurological symptoms, confusion, epilepsy, very, very important headache. In fact, the mother of one of my best friends died from epilepsy due to COVID here in France. So these are very severe symptoms, and we think that masitinib could be very helpful on this part of the disease that is probably less well known than the lung part. Next slide. Now, isocercetin has been known for quite a while to have antiviral activity in vitro, and there are a number of clinical trials being done presently in hepatitis C, in dengue. There is another one that is not written here on Ebola in Congo, and there are a number of studies also done by the Canadian with a number of these viruses. And this is because isocercetin inhibits the 3C-like protease, which is an enzyme that is common in many of these viruses. But it seems also to inhibit the binding of the spike protein to the receptor ACE2. Next slide. So the safety profile of masitinib is well known. There has been over 7,500 patients that have been randomized. We know that drug very well. We think we can provide with a risk management plan that will benefit all of the patients. And isocercetin is well known also. It has an FDA IND and a GRAS dossier, GRAS meaning generally recognized as safe. So it's a very safe molecule. So we think the combination could be a winner. Next slide.
Then it's a new section. Thank you, Jean-Pierre, for this presentation.
Or maybe we ask whether there are some questions until this stage.
We will finish the presentation and then
for
all questions. So we move to the second part of the presentation, which is a sort of summary of where masitinib is in the landscape of all the trials done with other compounds. So we move to the slide 17, which is on your screen. There are multiple strategies, but three main ones, or two main ones, I would say. The first one is the antiviral strategy that applies for mild, moderate, and severe cases. So you have heard about remdesivir, which has been registered by FDA recently with one positive study. There is also some negative study coming from China, so it's a debate. And there are others that are tested, and of course hydroxychloroquine should be classified in this antiviral strategy. There are also some other strategies, like stimulation of immune system through interferon, for instance, or plasma pheresis, which is the transfusion of the plasma of the cured patients who have developed the antibodies. And there is this anti-inflammatory or rather immunomodulation, which applies rather, except for corticosteroids, for the moderate and severe cases. You have heard about tocilizumab with some positive announcement from the French Parisian hospitals. It seems that it, and also by the Chinese themselves, who first identified the drug as potentially beneficial for moderate and severe cases. But there are others which are tested throughout the world. And I would say that masitinib plus isocercetin fits into this box, which is the immunomodulation to try to avoid the moderate and severe patients to go to intensive care unit with a high chance to die. It is not an antiviral, I would say, a fitted strategy, but rather to protect against a more severe outcome. Next slide. This is the positioning. As I said, we target moderate and severe patients, not the mild. For instance, remdesivir has been granted approval by FDA by reducing by 2 days the elimination of the virus in the body of the patients, but with no benefit in terms of survival for the moderate and severe patients. So it's absolutely not the same objective, absolutely not the same primary endpoint in a clinical study. Here we try to save some patients from a fatal outcome or severe complication due to the COVID. Alors, this population, moderate and severe, is not completely homogeneous, and there are some definitions done by the World Health Organization that we're using there. And we're not going to treat the critical patients, the one in intensive care unit. Why? Simply because those patients cannot swallow any pill, any tablets, any capsules for isocercetin capsules, so we cannot really treat them. Next slide. As a summary, and I will just repeat what Jean-Pierre has described, we think we have some differentiating factors that are almost unique to this combination. First, it targets the innate immune systems upstream, whereas the other immunomodulation strategies, they target rather interleukin, specific interleukin, which are, of course, extremely important in the disease. It can prevent thrombosis. This is something that has not been really researched so far in terms of treatment, I would say. Today, there is no reference trying to reach this objective. It can protect against complications, neurological complications that might become irreversible with more publications coming on this feature. And maybe the most interesting is the senescent cells, because we know the COVID virus kills much more older people than younger people, but really in a, I would say, logarithmic exponential pattern, which is not explained really by a weaker immune system in the older people. We think it's the importance of the senescent cells, and it makes our strategy rather, I would say, fitted for the age people, and many of the trials exclude the people above 80-year-old for safety reasons. And we've been asked literally by NSM to include those patients given the rational, the scientific rationale behind it. And this feature is probably the most specific and interesting, maybe, mechanism of action behind the combination. And only the combination can provide that, because if we go back to the slides presented by Jean-Pierre, none of the product by themselves can kill the senescent cells. Only the combination can do. So the importance of testing the combination, in particular in this age population. Then we move to the last section, which is the study design. So this is a study on slide 21 called AB20001. It's a phase two, of course. It's almost a proof of concept with extension, so to speak, because we have never treated the patients already. And so it will be a randomized, open-label, multicenter comparative phase two study. And the main inclusion criteria are, as we said, the moderate and the severe cases. There will be no limitation in terms of age for the reasons that I have mentioned before. And the patient enrollment is 100 per arm. 100 per arm, 100 per arm, and randomized 1-to-1. What is important is to understand what is the best supportive care in each of the two arms. For the control arm, everything is available at the discretion of the hospital. This is very important. There is no pre-selection. There is not only, you know, some of the treatments. Everything is authorized. And in particular, the anti-IL-6, so tocilizumab, also hydroxychloroquine for the ones who prefer hydroxychloroquine, and any antiviral strategy like remdesivir, for instance, are possible in the best supportive care. You know that there are not really reference treatments, and it depends on the country either, so it's rather complicated, but I would say in a summary that everything is actually accepted. For the ones who will receive masitinib plus isokercitin, it's the same. Everything is authorized except hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine for their known, I would say, drug-drug interaction that would complicate the safety of the patient. So the only thing which is excluded is the hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, but all the rest is possible. So when you read the design of this study, it's rather an add-on design because, of course, now people receive preferred treatment. And so those preferred treatments will be the background treatments, and then we will we'll add masitinib plus isoq in one arm and nothing in the other arm. So it's how we should read the study. Of course, it's going to be extremely important to stratify the use of those compounds, the background treatments. So the background treatments are stratified. Also, the age is stratified, and it's very important when you know we want to treat the population which is older than 80. The countries, if we open more than one country, will be stratified, of course, and the comorbidities will be stratified as well, because you know that the death rate and the outcome is different as far as the the comorbidities are concerned. So it's extremely important, if you want to interpret the study, to stratify all those factors. Otherwise, you come with, you know, the wrong interpretation. The primary endpoint is the classic clinical status patients. It's either a 9 points or a 7 points scale. Here we'll take the 7 point scale, but this is the WHO official scale. And this clinical status, we will evaluate it at day 15. And why day 15? Because this is where the patients need to have an improvement. It's something that should happen very quickly. 15 days, sorry, it's quick to get an outcome, but that's what the disease require. And it's going to be the primary endpoint, and so we will compare this clinical status between the two arms. Then there are some secondary endpoints that we will also measure. So this is the same clinical status that we will measure at day 7 or at the end of the 28 days treatment. But it's the same measure that we are going to use. And we are going also to measure the time to improvement of two categories in this clinical status. We are not... We are going to calculate it also, but there is no primary endpoint in terms of viral load, like remdesivir, for instance, because this is not a strategy to reduce the viral load faster, like remdesivir can do. Here, we want to improve the clinical status of the patients at day 15. That's really what we do. Of course, we're going to measure lots of biomarkers, inflammatory biomarkers, lots of biomarkers that we need to see if there is any indications of the responders versus the non-responders, and maybe see that some subgroup of patients could benefit more favorably from the treatment, like potentially the aged people or some other categories that we could identify through the biomarkers. We will also do a drug-drug interactions at the beginning for the first 6 patients, doing some PK analysis, which is requested because we never tried this combination before, for the safety so of the patients. Now, in terms of timing, well, first of all, who is the coordinator? The coordinator is Pascal Chanez. he's from the Hospital of Marseille. It's not Professor Raoult, it's another hospital. And he will be the coordinator of the study. Many other centers will join in France, and potentially we might open some additional countries to be able to do the enrollment. As you know, the enrollment has considerably decreased, which is good news for the population. There are still some cases, of course, new cases. The deconfinement might actually recreate some more patients at the hospital. The objective is to keep them at a low number, of course, by the government. We can understand that. But we're going to do the enrollment. It's not going to be a super fast enrollment. It's going to take probably 2 months, maybe 6 months. If we have to do it for 6 months, we will do it for 6 months. We think this COVID will occur again, maybe during winter, maybe the next winter. We don't know when, but it's not going to disappear from the planet. And so it will take what it takes, but we're going to do this study. We will do the DSMB is going to evaluate the safety and the efficacy on a regular basis. And if they find something like maybe some futility or at the opposite some favorable trend, then we might make decisions like stop the study, to not invest on 200 patients for nothing, or the opposite to end it a little earlier. So we do not expect any data before at least end of August, September, and maybe up to December. This is the reasonable timeline that we can expect from this study. We have gone through the highlights of these new opportunities for AB Science, and with Jean-Pierre, we are going to open it for your questions, and we are going to answer all what you have. You have two options, either by phone or by writing.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question over the phone, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad. You may, of course, submit your questions from the webcast platform. Thank you very much.
So maybe I'll take a first question that we have received in writing. So the first question is, there are some, at least one clinical study reported with a Canadian site for a clinical study with isocarcetin in China. Do we have results of this study?
I can take this. So this is Professor Michel Chrétien, who did a press release back in February, I think. And he was putting together a team with the Chinese to start a study with isocarcetin. My understanding is the study has not started yet. So there is no result. There are no results available.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I will take first questions regarding maybe the design of the study, and then we'll go to the biologic and the rationale again. Question received, why an open-label study?
I can take it. Alors, we so far have an open-label study because we didn't have the placebo of the isocarcetin ready fast enough. Now we're working on it with our partner, and we'll see if we have it ready fast enough, then we might amend and go blind. Anyway, the first six patients have to do PK, so there will be two options. Either after the PK, depending on how long it takes to do the PK, a placebo is possible, and then we amend and do a blinded study, or it's not. And we might not do it because we have to treat the patients. The decision is not made yet. Of course, it's better to do blinded. However, we have a procedure to keep the blind, although it's open label, so that we do not access the data. And so the DSMB can recommend it. And we don't see who is taking masitinib and placebo and who is in which arm.
Another question regarding the design of the study, will we have intermediary results?
I take it as well. So as I said, we have a futility test planned with roughly one-third of the patients. We think it's necessary to have a minimum of 50 patients before we can see anything, like we stop or we don't stop, a little bit like in an adaptive study. Otherwise, we're not going to have really results intermediary. It's not planned for that. The DSMB can always recommend to stop if they see some safety concerns. To stop for early efficacy with so few patients is very unlikely. They still have the possibility to recommend that. So I would say a futility test is always good in any study. Otherwise, it's likely that we have to wait the 200 patients before knowing the results.
Why would the enrollment take 2 to 6 months?
Alors, 2 to 6 months, I explained already. We don't know how many cases will occur in the next in the coming months. Nobody knows. And there are some countries which are more affected by, are still affected by the COVID, and they have more patients. But United States, it's crowded with clinical studies, crowded. So although they have more patients, since they have more studies, it's not really the best country to do that. Other countries which might be more interesting, where there are fewer clinical studies, might be Latin America, as you have seen, like me, in the newspaper. We'll see, and we explore possibility to open in such countries if we face difficulties in France or and Europe is also crowded. As you know, Discovery, for instance, the Discovery four arms have not been able to recruit their patients. So Europe is a challenge, USA is a challenge, and maybe Latin America, we'll see. So 2 to 6 months, reasonable.
Right. Another question regarding the design of the study. How important is it that patients are randomized very near to the time of the onset of symptoms? Is it to eliminate those patients too late in the disease?
Jean-Pierre, you want to answer this question?
But we will not select only the patients that are early in the disease, do we?
No, there is no. There is a maximum, but I think this maximum is 10 days or 15 days, so it leaves some lots of room. We don't take just freshly diagnosed.
So in 15 days you can have a severe disease or even be dead.
Exactly.
So it's not that early. I'm not sure I answered the question. So is it? Not sure.
Are you measuring IL-6, ferritin, and CRP as biomarker?
Yes.
And many others.
and IL-6 receptor, so the circulating IL-6 receptor, and the dimers. Yeah, absolutely.
And for the dimer is, of course, more relevant given the mechanism of action of combination.
I take another question. You mentioned that the virus invades both the CNS and skeletal muscles. Can you elaborate on the neurological symptoms, and are you including secondary endpoints related to these aspects?
Jean-Pierre, you want to elaborate on neurology symptoms? Hello? We might face a technical problem with Jean-Pierre. Okay, so I will try to answer. We know that the virus enters into the brain. That's well known now, and probably stimulates the immune cells present in the brain. We know, of course, microglia and mast cells are very much present in the brain, and they probably are activated by the virus the same way as those two cells are activated for different reasons, of course, in ALS, in MS, also in mastocytosis, where we have lots of data in this disease, creating damages. Whether those damages are irreversible or not, we don't know yet. It would require some more studies. Anyway, we're going to look at that and some neurological parameters, but it's really exploratory, of course. But it will be interesting to know if patients treated with this combination have fewer neurological symptoms after 1 month and even after.
Sorry, I had been disconnected somehow.
So I answered for you.
Okay.
I answered
you.
For you, but if you want to
I was saying that in the neurological disease of COVID, microthrombi are very important. I don't know when I was disconnected, but I was saying that there had been MRI of patients showing thrombi in the brain, some of which can lead to epilepsy or even paralysis and confusions, etc.
Another question maybe for you, Jean-Pierre. Do you have some thoughts on the use of gelsoline as inflammation regulator? I don't know if I pronounced it well. G-E-L-S-O-L-I-N.
Gelsoline? What?
Gelsoline. G-E-L-S-O-L-I-N.
No, I don't.
or this is a typo, I don't know, in the question.
I've not read anything about that. Is it in the literature somewhere, or
no? No, it's a question, never mind. So another question regarding, now we have multiple questions regarding the combination of masitinib and isotretinoin in senescent cells. So how was the synergy demonstrated between the two molecules?
Can we go to the slide?
Yeah.
Sure is it?
No, the slide with the senescent cell, that's not the one. And there is a little graph.
It's slide 12. It's on the screen.
Yeah.
Jean-Pierre, can you see it?
No, I don't. Not yet.
It might be because you have been disconnected, because we have the slide.
Okay, I have it too now.
So you
okay. So you can see that this showed the viability of the cells, the non-senescent microglia, the in the A panel on the left, viability is preserved. Of course, in non-senescent microglia, whether masitinib or isotretinoin, nothing is happening. Okay, now in the B panel, the senescent microglia, you can see that isotretinoin does very little, and masitinib also does very little. And you can see now on the right part of the B panel, so the number six graph, you can see that when you add isotretinoin with masitinib, then you start to have the higher dose, the killing of the senescent microglia. That is the evidence. And
okay.
So this is an in vitro, but I can also tell you that in vivo, we can also see the same thing.
Now, just one comment on this. This is a new data, as Jean-Pierre explained, that it is not published yet. So something we release today. That justify that we explore the combination masitinib plus isotretinoin. For the ones who are interested by this topic, this is relatively recent, I would say 4 or 5 years, and the targeting of senescent cells is research by us, but research by others, and there are some combination known with tyrosine kinase inhibitor and quercetin, which and some publications interesting to read that tell us that this combination can kill so the senescent cells and be beneficial, at least in vitro in some models, in neurodegenerative disorders, but also in oncology. And it has been described dasatinib plus quercetin. And we think that masitinib plus isoQ is a better combination, because masitinib is safer than dasatinib, first, and two, isotretinoin is more bioavailable than quercetin. And if the senescent cell is a good strategy, which we don't know yet, because it has not been tried yet in late stage study, but if it is a good strategy, then the combination MASI plus isoQ can do it. It's not the only one, but it can do it. And among all combinations, probably is the best available combination. That's why it's interesting to use this one. Alors, in COVID, it's interesting because of senescent cells in particular, and also because of the features of the two products separately. But this senescent cell is not COVID specific. It's actually many diseases. It's a kind of general new strategy that might be applicable in neurodegenerative disorders first, I would say, and potentially in cancers, and potentially in other opportunities or indications like COVID. But this senescent cell new strategy, new target, is relatively recent, and we will try to explore it with the combination isoQ-masitinib. That's the message we would like to deliver today on the top of the COVID.
So that leads to another question that we have. Do you plan to make other studies with masitinib plus isocarcetin combination?
That's the ideal transition to what I just said, hein, Jean-Pierre.
In fact, we had the idea before COVID. We had the idea of associating masitinib with isocarcetin well before we knew COVID, based on this data. There are other data, but we just show you this data. This is sort of the most striking data. And based on this data, we had envisioned to do a clinical trial in ALS in particular of the association. And then when came COVID, we already have thought about the association. We already, we had done all the literature on isocarcetin, interact with this other company, et cetera. And so we thought that because of the thrombosis in particular and the antiviral capacity of isocarcetin, that combining the two to also kill the senescent cells in COVID would be a winning combination. But historically, the association was not thought because of COVID.
So it's a new opportunity for masitinib and isocarcetin, because isocarcetin has its own development in cancers and thrombosis. But it's a new opportunity for the two compounds to do a synergistic development, like 1 + 1 = 3. With senescent cell, it's even more spectacular. It's 0 + 0 = something, 1 maybe, if it works, nobody knows. But if it works, it can be remarkable. It needs to be evaluated properly in clinical studies. Question, Laurent?
Can you describe your intellectual property on the proposed therapy to treat COVID-19 indication?
We can only say that before launching any new development, we make sure that we have filed at minimum some patents, which is the case, of course, both for isoQ and masitinib. And so in case there is something, it will be protected.
You would agree that it's not obvious.
Voilà. The combination was not... what I would like to say, the question has not been raised, but ideally we should have done 4 arms, like MASI alone, ISOQ alone, the combination and the control. That would be the ideal, factorial design, except that it's extremely complicated given that we are at the end of the curve of the COVID. We might have another one, but now it's getting complicated. So we prefer to do the combination versus the control to give the maximum chance to the patients, and how to interpret the combo versus the product separated. It's going to be difficult, of course. Isocarcetin is exploring, there are some studies with isocarcetin alone, and we might have an indirect comparison using those studies. But that's one question methodologically that will be asked, if there is anything positive, of course. Okay, so it was a good set of questions, Laurent. Is it? We have covered most of it. So it's exploratory at this stage. 200 patients is not a lot, as you can imagine, and COVID is not the key priority for AB Science. Masitinib is explored in late stage in mastocytosis, ALS, multiple sclerosis, severe asthma. However, it creates a new opportunity with a strong scientific rationale. And on the top of that, this is the beginning of the exploration of a combination with isocarcetin. And it, as Jean-Pierre has told you, is not going to be the only one.
And we're going to further explore other indications because we think it makes sense, these senescent cells, which should play a critical role, at least in neurodegenerative disorders, potentially in this COVID situation, because what's striking in this disease is the high mortality rate among all people. It's very, very striking. So there might be a reason. And the senescent cell looks like one of the most plausible reasons why there are so much death. Alors, the age, the immune system, the comorbidities in the age patients are also, I would say, arguments that can explain this high mortality rate, but it might not be enough. And so we do this trial potentially to answer this question. But if this is true, then it can change dramatically the fate of the aged patients. And today, this is the problem. They are the population at risk. And no strategy today targets this population. The opposite, it avoids them. So this is why I think it's necessary to try the combo today in COVID. That would be my conclusion. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jean-Pierre, to drive our scientific strategy and inspire us, give us good ideas. And I hope to have the pleasure to have other calls on the same topic or on other topics. Thank you for your participation.
Okay. Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's web conference. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.